You're listening to Mind Your Own Business. Hi, I'm Scott Sullivan, your host. Mind Your Own Business is a weekly show that we do talking to some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs, helping you to be better at being a business professional by learning from all of the experience that these entrepreneurs and CEOs bring from all around the world. Exclusively here on Inspired News Radio. And now it's time for Mind Your Own Business. Welcome to Mind Your Own Business. This is Scott Sullivan, your host, and I am super excited today. I have to tell you, I have a guest today that is going to blow your mind. First of all, I just have to say, Will Clefcorn, thank you so very, very much for joining us on Mind Your Own Business, all the way from Lincoln, Nebraska. Will, good morning, and welcome to Mind Your Own Business.
Good morning, Scott. It is bright and sunny in Lincoln, Nebraska, which has been a long time coming, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, we are super happy to have you here today. So, long-time listeners for Mind Your Own Business are going to know I really enjoy what I do here, and I really enjoy getting to know entrepreneurs. And I talk about the nuggets. There are going to be nuggets galore, guys. Today, we're going to be panning for gold. So strap on, strap in, keep your legs and your hands and feet inside the ride, because Will Clefcorn today is going to give us some nuggets. It's going to be fantastic. First of all, let me tell you, he is the very first employee of a company called Excel Institute. He's currently the vice president of sales in charge of revenue. And before we get started, just take, 30 seconds to a minute right now, Will, and just tell us a little bit about Excel Institute so that it gives us some context before we dive into the origin story.
Yeah, so best way to think about it, Scott, is, lots of people have grown up, obviously, in different forms of business, playing athletics, and have had many teachers, coaches, and bosses. And by and large, you ask people, how many people in your life that were in a management or a boss role have had such a profound impact on you that you couldn't have got to where you're at today without them being in your life? And unfortunately, when most people answer that, they don't say more than one or two people. And the Excel Institute, what we do in a nutshell is we ensure that in sales organizations, salespeople roll up to really great sales coaches. So our business model is we support frontline managers, senior level leaders, and sales organizations to help them become better coaches, managers, and leaders of their sales teams, not only to grow sales, of course, but also to have a meaningful and profound impact on salespeople's lives.
That's fantastic. I have got to tell you, when you and I first met and we started talking about this, I saw immediately the need. This is such an underserved market. I mean, we have great salespeople that are out there every day carrying a bag, carrying a number, salesmen and women that are super professional and just doing a great job of conveying the value proposition to clients and taking orders and getting that revenue generated. And they get promoted, and sometimes they're just completely out of their depth. And we end up having, mediocre, and I'm trying to be not to be negative, but we have mediocre to poor managers, and now the Excel Institute is changing all that. So congratulations and fantastic. We're going to come back at the end of Mind Your Own Business, and we're going to talk a lot more about the Excel Institute. But again, I want to just say thank you for being here today. I'm super, super excited. My listeners know that we always start with the origin story, and the reason we do is because we want to know who you are. What made you as an entrepreneur? What set your feet on that path? How did you decide to be, kind of to get to where you are? So we usually go back a few years, so to those seeds that were being germinated by people and events, and we kind of talk about that. So tell us a little bit about, the Will Clefcorn story long before the Excel Institute and kind of where you came from and a little bit of your background. I'm dying to hear some of this detail. This is great.
Yeah, no doubt. So it depends how far you want to go back, Scott, but, you know, we'll start just...
We only have an hour, so we only have an hour, okay? So
well,
we do have to get...
here's the deal. So I'm, for the most part, born and raised in Lincoln, Nebraska, and it's a wonderful city. I've lived here my entire life, and I don't really envision ever leaving. But as far back as I can remember, I've always been a contrarian person by nature, and just a little bit rebellious as a kid. Always didn't want to conform to what everybody said that I should do. And you know, I don't know how old I was, probably around the age of 12. My father, actually, who's a creative director for an advertising company here in Lincoln, had an opportunity to go take a job in Seattle. And as being a selfish 12-year-old, I remember saying, you know, no way, we're not doing that. I got my friends here. I got everything here. And ultimately, they decided to stay in Lincoln. But out of that event, I remember thinking to myself, I can build something in Lincoln, Nebraska that's just as good as what they have in Seattle, Washington. And that's always stuck with me, and I've always wanted to be in sales, which is kind of the gift that I have in terms of really naturally liking people, liking to communicate, try new things that way. So being an entrepreneur has always been in the back of my mind, and how I got to where I'm at today, I couldn't have described it to you back then, but I always knew that it was going to happen. So along that path growing up, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying is that's amazing that at 12 you already had that awareness, and you know, you were already thinking globally at 12, saying I can do this from Lincoln, Nebraska, just the same as I can do it from Seattle. I mean, people are talking about that now because of the internet and the technology that we have. It doesn't matter where you live, and you knew that at 12. So keep going. This is great.
Well, I don't know that I knew that at 12, but what I knew at 12 is that contrast in our lives is very important. So, you know, that moment sitting around the dinner table, I clearly knew what I didn't want, which helped me identify what I do want. So that was probably the biggest benefit that came out of that moment. But, you know, continuing growing up, it plays into, I've always been a huge sports fan, played a lot of different athletics growing up, and it was there where I had this realization, and still do today, that, you know, on paper, there's lots of teams that look really talented, and at the end of the season or at the end of the day, they underachieve, and vice versa. There's lots of teams on paper who don't look all that talented, but they get maximum effort out of their players and they overachieve. And the common denominator of that is always coaching. And so when Excel Institute, when Bill Ekstrom, our president, came to me more than 10 years ago and said, hey, here's my concept around sales teams and how much they're impacted by sales coaches, it was a no-brainer for me to take that entrepreneurial opportunity and get to where we're at today.
That's awesome. Okay, so I'm going to unpack just a little bit of this. So just to recap, born in, you know, kind of raised in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you have very early on decided this is what you're going to be. Now, there's some themes here, okay? So I've done this a lot of times, and there's also that little bit of a thread that I'm seeing in a lot of my other entrepreneurs is that, you know, contrarian is probably a little harsher word than I would use, but they're nonconformists. So I do see that. So that's great. And then now I got to say, were there other siblings involved? Were you an only child? Were you, what was the interaction around the family when you say at 12 years old, you're, you know, stomping in your heels in and saying, okay, Dad, I'm not moving to Seattle at 12. Okay. Yeah. Were there other siblings involved, or were you an only child?
No. I have two sisters, a younger sister, 5 years younger than me, who lives here in Lincoln, Nebraska, and an older sister, 5 years older than me, who lives in Kansas City, Missouri. And my older sister, she's a superintendent, has been an educator, English teacher her entire career. And this kind of plays into the question, Scott. Lots of my family were educators growing up. I knew, too, and I still know today, and I haven't ruled it out, that I may go back and teach and coach and be darn good at that and enjoy it. But playing off of that contrarian or nonconformist, picture, what I chose to do is to say, okay, I could go be a teacher and educator, and I know that I'd love it, and I know that I'd be good at it, but I'm always going to have this seed in the back of my head of could I've went and built something exceptional and really great and be a creator and have the money that comes along with it if I'm candid, knowing that I can go back and be an educator or a teacher. And so that's kind of guided and directed this too. But and from a family perspective, you know, my parents, my siblings, we have a great loving family, loving extended family, but there's also been a really healthy relationship in terms of what I call radical individualization, meaning that, hey, everybody's their own person and everybody's going to do the things that are most important to them. And, you know, my parents, thankfully, just kind of let me go on my own path and provided the necessary amount of support and love along the way.
That's fantastic. Okay. So you're past the 12 years old. You've decided to stay in Lincoln with or without your parents. If your dad wants to move to Seattle, go ahead, Dad. No, I'm embellishing that. But okay, so the family stays. Now, what's next? You graduate high school. You go off to college. You join the Marines. What's the next step for the Will Clefcorn story?
Yeah. So again, being a Lincoln kid, graduated from Lincoln Southeast High School here in town. It was never really even a consideration of what I was going to do next. The next logical step was University of Nebraska. Got to enjoy my experience there, which I would call a traditional college experience, at least one from an entrepreneurial perspective. Again, I knew what I was going to do. So my college experience was more about how do I meet and interact with as many unique people as I can. The studies were somewhat secondary. I needed to get enough to what I needed to do to get a degree. And, 4 years were really, really great. Enjoyed every minute of it. And then after that, I got into that trap of, you know, which I think almost every college student gets into, which is, okay, I've graduated, now what? Because, you know, in order to get a great job, you got to have experience. And in order to get experience, you got to get a job. And so at that point, I was kind of soul searching for what I wanted to do, knew that I wanted to do something entrepreneurial, but didn't really have the route, and went and actually painted houses for about 6 months, which was a great experience.
That's great. Now, was this I've seen the ads for college kids that paint houses in the summer. Is that the same type of company, or was it a local company that you knew somebody and that was your first taste of entrepreneurialism?
Yeah, so it was actually my best friend's uncle. He owns his own business and does a lot of great things. And I went and worked with him for 6 months with a couple of other buddies. And actually, it was kind of a nice little reprieve before heading out into the real world. And actually, as a result of that, I got two season tickets to Husker games. So it was a pretty nice little coup.
There's the perk for you. All right. Well, that's fantastic. So, all right. So we've made it all through college. Now you've finished painting, you've slapped some paint on some houses, and you're kind of getting the taste of, you know, what it's going to be like. So all along the way, I'm hearing you've got this little, you know, blinking light in the back of your brain somewhere that's saying, you know, you are going to be an entrepreneur. You're going to be an entrepreneur, you know. But so when was that first real foray? When did the first real opportunity raise its head and you go, oh, that's what I've been waiting for? So when did that moment actually of recognition come for you?
Well, it's interesting because at a macro level, it was always there, right, as you alluded to. And sometimes the biggest mistake people can make is letting details get in the way of their faith. And so I always knew that it was going to happen. And so, you know, the first job I took out of college, I was worked at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And that experience, I knew that's not what I wanted to do. But at the end of the day, it paid the bills and it was good training. It was good experience. And I wouldn't take back, you know, any of that because I learned a lot of good things. But while I was working there, ironically, one of the people who I gave a ride to while picking them up, they worked at a ESPN radio and got myself an interview there. And that was somewhat entrepreneurial in the sense that I was driving my own book of business and working in sports and athletics, and that was great. But, you know, while doing that job, got introduced to another gentleman who ran an e-commerce startup software. And he actually used to be a student of my grandfather's. I went and worked for him, and that's where it all kind of started to come together. did that for about 6 months, and then I got introduced to our CEO, our president, Bill Ekstrom, who came up with the idea for Excel Institute. And, you know, as he was floating that idea out there one night at a barbecue, I said, listen, I called him the next morning at 6:30 in the morning. I said, listen, if you're really going to go through and start that business, I'd like you to consider me to be your first employee, to be the VP of sales, to drive business development and growth around that idea that coaching matters. Especially in sales. And that's how it all kind of came to manifest.
That's great. See, I don't believe in coincidence. I know you don't either. We had this conversation. So I believe those people were put in your path at exactly the right moment to where you were open and ready for that. I mean, it's sort of like I use the analogy when I talk to some of my entrepreneurs that the seed has been planted. You're just waiting for the sunshine and the water, right? So somebody has to come along and water it. And once it gets watered, so it sounds like Bill was the one that started that for you. So, well, this has been fantastic. So I want to take just one more minute to kind of wrap this all up into a bow. What were some of the people and the events during this course of time before you got to, you know, the Excel Institute? You know, who were the people that meant the most to you, that were the mentors, those driving factors behind you? You know, they used the old saying that says behind every great man. Well, we don't talk about that anymore. Who are the mentors and the people that actually influenced you that maybe didn't know, even though you knew in the macro level, like you said, that someday you were going to be an entrepreneur? Who were those people that were influencing that watering, as I said, even before you even knew it? So what are some of the things, events and people in that arena?
Yeah, well, not to be cliche, but to piggyback on the point you just made, there's so many people, both big and small, and I'm a little bit holistic in my thinking in the sense that there's something to be learned from everybody, and I don't care if
agreed.
You know, my six-year-old son's taught me more about life than I've learned in 36 years.
You're not done yet at six.
right. Well, then the two-year-old daughter's coming up the rear real quick, so she's teaching me even more. But having that mentality, that thirst for ongoing learning and just being curious about people and things, you know, that came from my amazing mentor, my grandfather, who shares the same name as me. His name was William Clefcorn. He was a fascinating man, beloved professor at University of Wesleyan here in Lincoln, but he also happened to be the poet laureate of Nebraska, and he was the type of guy who anybody, if you met Bill Clefcorn, you automatically gave the benefit of the doubt to anyone who was in Bill Clefcorn's family. He was that type of person, and you know, I soaked up as much time and as much wisdom and as much love as I could in the 78 years that he lived, you know, while I was on this earth. So he was hands down the most important person in my entire life.
That is awesome. So thank you. I got chills right now just thinking about it. Thanks for sharing that. That's fantastic. What I love that you just said is that he radiated so much, you know, energy and so much, you know, enthusiasm in who he was and so much integrity that the rest of you just if you're just within the circle, you got to bathe in that. So congratulations. That's fantastic. There's another thread. Most of the entrepreneurs that I talk to over the years have that one. They can, you know, and they say almost verbatim what you said, and that is, wow, it's too numerous to count. But then as their, you know, mind goes to that one spot, they always have that one human being, you know, whether it be a grandmother or a professor or, you know, somebody that they can point to that say, that's the person that put my feet on the path. So that's congratulations, and that's fantastic. I do have to ask real quick, though. I did not know. Does every state have a poet laureate? I mean, is that this is something I did not know. I'm learning from you. This is one of the nuggets I'm taking away. So well, I live in California. Is there a California state laureate, poet laureate?
You know, I do not know the answer to that question.
Oh, okay.
You know, I know that how that came to be is a little bit beyond me. I know, you know, my grandfather didn't start writing until he was 37. Which is an interesting story in its own right. But I think it was 1982 where the unicameral here in Nebraska came and offered him that opportunity. And you know, obviously he took it because there's just it's such a great opportunity, and there's so much good that comes out of that. But in terms of is there state poets? I don't know the answer to that question, Scott.
Well, I'm going to ask you one more. Just right before the break, I got to ask you this last question, and that is, you spent a lot of time with your namesake. You spent a lot of time basking in his 78 years, like you said, for the years that you were on Earth together. Did you get a little bit of the poet bug? I mean, if I go to your diary and I open up your journal from last year, am I going to see some prose there?
You're gonna see a lot, and I can send it your way. You know, and I will, because what I tell you is, you know, as I get older, and I think everybody can resonate with this on some level, you start to internalize and see the world through a different lens than you did when you were younger. And for me, the ability to articulate that on paper and write poetry or write short stories or write books, it becomes cathartic, the same way that athletics used to be for me, which I can't really, you know, do at the level that I used to. It's in my bloodlines, and I enjoy doing that. But for me, it's over the years, it's become something that I enjoy doing, not something that I feel like I have to do. And that's important to have those types of outlets and those types of, you know, things that keep you happy and keep you growing and keep those creative juices flowing.
Well, Will, I have to tell you, this has been fantastic on the first part of Mind Your Own Business and getting to know you and a little bit of the origin story. So we're going to take just a couple of minute break right now. We're going to let some station identification happen, and we're going to let some of our sponsors actually try and talk to you a little bit about some of their great products. This is Scott Sullivan with Mind Your Own Business, and my guest today, Will Klefkorn from Excel Institute. And we'll be right back right after this message. Welcome back to Mind Your Own Business. Your host, Scott Sullivan. I am so excited. If you have not just listened, if you're just tuning in right now, my gosh, go back and listen in the archives, because we have a guest today that'll blow you away. Great nuggets of information, a great origin story. My guest today is Will Klefkorn, the Vice President of Excel Institute, and also the number one employee there, part of the original, you know, kernel of the beginnings of Excel Institute. So, Will, thank you again for being my guest, and welcome back to Mind Your Own Business.
You bet, Scott. This is great.
Okay. So, when last our hero, like, you know, our superhero, when last, you know, the old campy 60s, you know, we have our superhero in a precarious situation. So, in our origin story, we had just talked about the fact that here we have this big athletic, you know, man that is just, you know, got two beautiful children and a wife, and life is just good. And now we find out he's a poet. So that's fantastic. So that is definitely not a thread that I see in a lot of entrepreneurs, but I love that you talked about that being your cathartic side, where you were, you know, able to express yourself and work through that. So that's fantastic. Go back, guys, and listen. If you didn't get to hear the first half of Mind Your Own Business, you should definitely go back and listen to it. It's great. So now what we do after the break, usually, and my listeners know this, is we talk a little bit about, you know, the things that are kind of motivational to you. So now you're at that point where you've now jumped in, you're employee number one, and you and Bill, and I'm going to have you say his name again. Bill, the CEO of Excel, is what's his name?
Yeah, Bill Ekstrom, Ekstrom.
Okay, so Bill Ekstrom and you are now, you know, you've got the card table set up in the storefront, you know, as the entrepreneurial bug, you know, drops in. So now you guys have started the Excel Institute and things are rolling. Talk to me about your kind of day to day. What are the things that when you get up in the morning, you know, what's your routine look like? How do you stay motivated? You know, we are all entrepreneurial. We all have that, you know, that are listening to this show right now. And they're saying, you know, now, Will, tell me, what are the things I need to do on the days that I'm really, really doing great? And what are the things I need to do on the days when maybe it's just not going as well as I want it to? How do I get through that day and go on? So tell us about the things that motivate you, keep you inspired, and keep you plugging along.
Yeah, so the one thing that I do, and this has been a learned behavior through life experience, is meditation has become huge in my life. And so every single day, first thing in the morning waking up, it's 20 minutes of meditation. And the reason why that's become so important, and I think everybody can relate to this, it's, you know, no matter what time and space you're living in, you're always at the edge of time. And so life feels like it's busy and hectic. But in 2018, because of technology, because the world has gotten smaller, there's so much noise. There's so many moving parts that are going on in life and in business and so many things that you can, you know, put your attention towards. I find that 20 minutes a day, non-negotiable, sitting in silence is the best thing that I can do to not only pre-pave and be intentional about my day, but just to help myself, you know, understand that I don't have to get consumed by everything that's going on in my day if that's a choice that I make. And so starting off with meditation has been a huge best practice because everything there that follows, you know, your every day is unique. There's going to be good days, there's going to be bad days, but as long as I set it up with intention through meditation, everything seems to flow, Scott.
That's fantastic. Is there, so for us that are either newbies, you know, there could be some listeners out there that are huge on meditation, and we'll, when we get to the end of the show, we'll put some hashtags out and we'll talk about social media so that people that are sharing this can also come back and, you know, interact with you. But before we do that, for us newbies that aren't, you know, we don't start our day with meditation, or we haven't found the joy of that yet, are there resources out there that I should be looking at? Are there? Do you have a book that you can recommend, or a website, or is there something that I should be looking at?
Yeah, you know, I've listened to a lot of Dan Harris. If you're not familiar with Dan Harris, look him up. He's all over the place. There's a lot of reading by a gentleman that used to be a doctor in what he referred to as mind-body medicine. His name's John Sarno, Sarno. I read a lot of his stuff.
Okay.
But there, you know, it's meditation. Lots of people like to think about it. You say that word, there's a stigma around it. You know, think of the person with the crossed legs and the fingers up in the air. But really, what I mean by that, you know, really what I mean by that is just find 20 minutes to just do nothing but focus on your breath. You know, and whether you can be walking your dog, you can be petting your dog, you can be sitting in sweatpants, it doesn't matter. It's just being intentional about calming your mind for a little bit, because once you get going in that day, there's so many things that grab your attention. It's, you know, you just want to be able to start in a place of solitude.
That's fantastic. I love the advice. I just recently did an episode of Mind Your Own Business with a CEO from India, actually, which is going to air actually the first week of June. And he changed his life, very similar to what you're saying, is he took his phone and put it in a different room at night now so that he does not sleep anywhere near or can hear or feel the vibration or anything else. And he doesn't actually look at his phone until he's had his, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of meditation and his quiet time to calm his brain, because he coined a phrase, and I thought it was pretty interesting, and I'll share it with you. And that is, he says, that phone is chaos in a box. He says, as soon as you turn that phone on and you look at it, you're off and running. He said, so you're very unlikely to find that 20 minutes of solitude, which you just mentioned, I love, once your day has started. So that's great. I love this. This is a great theme that's also passing through some of our entrepreneurs. That's great.
Yeah, well, I think he brings up a good point about the phone. And that, you know, I read an article a while back that resonated with me. It said, you know, the phone in some ways is very addictive in the sense that it's gotten to the point where it feels like a slot machine, you know, because when you have all your notifications or you pull up your email, it's this incessant need to say, well, what's next? What am I going to get? What am I going to get? And if you aren't intentional about throwing that thing to the side in a place where you can't get it, you know, I'm guilty of it. Everybody's guilty of it. You always go back to it to see what's new. And it's just not healthy in the long term.
You're the family that puts the phones in a box in the closet when you have dinner, aren't you? You're that family, aren't you?
Well, my wife would tell you I could get a lot better at that. So,
no, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus. That's okay. What's your wife's name?
Her name's Amy.
Amy, he's really good. He's really good, Amy. I know she's listening right now, so don't give him a hard time. It was my fault. I shouldn't have mentioned it. Oh, Well, so yes. Okay. So you start your day off with meditation, and then how do you then, once the pressure of the day and the things that are happening kind of, you know, fall in on you. So what are the things that you do then, you know, to keep that positive energy and you're just oozing with it. I mean, you are enthusiastic. Every time I've spoken to you on the phone, I can feel the energy even through the phone line. So what do you do to keep that up during the course of your day, week, month, year? I mean, what are the things and who are the people that you go to for that recharge?
Yeah. Well, lots of different people and lots of different things, right? I think one of the best way to answer that is just to realize that my grandfather, we were talking about earlier, he always had a line that said that, you know, the line between everything mattering and nothing mattering is razor sharp. And I always thought that was really a really fun way to think about it, because you can make the biggest deal about everything, but if you go sit with my grandmother who's 85, or you go visit an old person's home, you know, and you talk to them about, they're not too concerned about those bills that they had or that work that they had in 1940. So it's a healthy balance. It's a healthy balance between those two, of realizing, you know, I can be engaged in my work and really care about something without getting overwhelmed. And so it's okay if I want to go take 15 minutes and walk at 11 o'clock. You know, it's okay if I want to pack up and go to the park at 3 and then come back and do my work from 10 to 12. And fortunately, I work for an employer who has that type of culture and has that type of mindset as well. But in 2018, you know, there's so many opportunities, whether you want to leverage technology for development or for talking to people or just going out and doing your own thing. You know, I try not to take it too seriously to the point where you just get stressed. You allow yourself to become overwhelmed.
That's great advice. I love that. I feel like this is, you know, listening to you and the more I understand about the Excel Institute and the culture that you're building, it's like you're building something, you know, like I want to have the job that I want to create a company that gives people the job that I've always wanted in my life. to have that flexibility, to have, you know, the day where, you know, I need to take the 15 minutes and go pet my dog and take a walk around the park, then that's fine, because the boss, the coach, the manager knows that I'm not going to shirk the responsibility. I'm still going to get it done. But at that particular moment, that's what's best for me so that I can be a better employee. And it's not that thumb, you know, I'm not under someone's thumb sitting in a cubicle saying, well, you were 15 minutes late getting here and you're not leaving for 15 more minutes, you know, and that kind of thing, where they're standing in line to punch their time card. I can already envision it in my mind, so I see that. So
well,
that's fantastic.
And hard work and satisfaction don't have to be binary things, right? And that, and it's so counterintuitive, and people, you know, for the longest time, especially in publicly traded companies, it's kind of, well, we're going to whip the number out of you. And you can do that. You can do that for a while, but eventually you're going to limit success, or the people are going to leave. And that's probably, in my opinion, when you look at generational science, for example, you know, don't confuse loyalty with lack of options. You know, somebody, a millennial, which I'm a fringer on that. I'm a fringer on that, Scott. But if I'm talented and I'm going to work and I'm spending 50 to 60 hours at work, which is more than I spend with my family, and the culture isn't such that it allows for freedom and creativity, and quite frankly, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a stigma to this word, but love for the people that I work with, I got plenty of different options out there, because the cell phone has flattened the world. I can go do whatever I want.
That is amazing. I've already got two huge nuggets. I've got the phrase, that the line that your grandfather always said, the difference between, say it again so I can capture it.
Yeah, it was the line between everything mattering and nothing mattering is razor sharp.
Right. I got that one. And then we just now, all these nuggets that you are dropping out here, man, I'm going to have to start. I got to get a bigger pan for my gold. This is fantastic. So that's great. Well, this is a great transition. This pulls us right in to the last segment of Mind Your Own Business. By the way, first of all, I just want to say thank you. You have been an outstanding guest, and you have just shared with us some very super fantastic, great information. And I can hardly wait now to get you into your passion, because in the last segment of Mind Your Own Business, we always talk about the current, you know, the current position, the current company that you're building and that you're driving revenue for, and how our listeners then can now engage with you. This is my favorite part of the entire job. I love after an episode airs and seeing, you know, Twitter blow up, or seeing, you know, the social media, seeing Facebook, you know, posts coming out, because that means there are thousands of people out there that are listened and the information has resonated with these people. And now they're saying, I got to get me some more of that Will Klefkorn, man. I got to get me some more of that. So let's talk a little bit in this transition now. Let's talk about the Excel Institute and let's do a deep dive. Tell me what it is that you do on a regular basis, where the company's going, and more, most importantly, is how do the listeners that are listening right now, how do they engage with you, and what are the resources they can be for you to bring you, you know, the perfect ideal client, or to tell the right people, or whatever. So let's do a deep dive on that for the next few minutes.
Right. Well, simply put, is we help sales organizations grow. You know, let's not confuse things. It's, you know, while there's all sorts of things that go into culture, every single sales leader has a daunting task, which is hit my number. You know, I got to grow sales. And so at our core, that's what we do. And our approach is unique, Scott, in the sense that we're only working with frontline managers. We're only working with second line managers in sales organizations to help them become the best coach that they can be of their sales team. Because, you know, earlier when you were talking about, you know, great salespeople, all these different resources, and then they get thrown into a role, unfortunately, what we see all the time is, hey, I was a high-performing salesperson. I now got into the sales management role, and I'm responsible for leading a team of people and coaching them to higher levels of performance, which is a totally different skill set than being able to sell to clients. And so our whole existence is to put in a unique, measurable sales coaching process for sales organizations and give sales managers the long-needed opportunity to actually grow in that role of coach to be able to grow sales. And so we've been doing that for about 10 years. We've ebbed and flowed. You know, when we initially started out, it was just, hey, let's pull together sales management teams. Over the years, our clients have came back and said, that's great, but we really need you guys to be more consultative. We need to be able to measure the quality and quantity of coaching of our sales managers and correlate that to sales success. So we're doing that on an ongoing basis, which is really, really great. And this fall, we're going to be coming out with a book that details over 100,000 live sales coaching interactions that everybody will have access to. And so that's where we're going next.
Okay, so I got to unpack this real quick because, you know, 30 years of sales for myself, I've been around for a long time in the professional sales world. Yeah. The metric's always been real simple. You're either putting a number on your board or you're not. I mean, there's always been. What I heard you say, and I want to make sure because you went over this really fast. I heard you say that you are correlating now, you are able to, and I want to talk a little bit about this in detail. You're able to correlate, you know, a stellar salesperson moving into a managerial role that is tasked with growing the overall business and the number, obviously. And you're saying is you can now link coaching that person to a number so that now the number is not just the only metric. Now the metric I'm looking at is, and then fill in that blank, because what I'm hearing you say is really groundbreaking. I mean, this is really, you know, game-changing type of verbiage that I'm hearing, because as a sales manager in all of my years, you either lived or died by the quarterly projection or by the monthly number or whatever it was. So now right. I can go into my boss and I can say, well, what I really need is some coaching. Now that would not have happened 25 years ago. I'm telling you, when I got into this business, it's like, that doesn't happen. You don't walk in and close your boss's door and say, you know, boss, I'm over my head here. I don't think I'm going to, you know, I'm doing the right job. I think I'm going to need some training. Oh, that just isn't going to happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's we're scratching the surface for a number of different reasons, you know, on that paradigm shift. But, you know, the biggest thing is, so if you take a senior level manager or a frontline manager, they're going to be responsible for hitting the number, and they should, and that's not going away because I'm glad it's not as a salesperson, because that's what makes it fun, right? That's the competitive nature of it. But what's been a challenge for so long is, and you know this, Scott, you've been in sales, it's if I say you have a senior level executive who has 10 sales managers and five of them are at 110% of goal and the other five are at 80% of goal, if you ask them the question, what constitutes that difference? You know, they one of two things. They either can't answer it or they go simply to the salespeople and look at what they're doing, right? And so what we're saying is if you believe that the productivity of a sales team, which Peter Drucker said back in the 1920s, is a reflection of the manager, then you need to put the emphasis on what the manager's doing with the salespeople because that's what's driving performance. And so what we're saying is, listen, if you look at performance, you take something like giving sales call feedback. We're able to look and say your managers who give feedback at a certain clip to their sales reps are at 110% of goal. And when you fall below this threshold, your managers are missing numbers. So you don't have a sales issue. You have a sales management issue.
Excellent. Okay. So can I also extrapolate from the conversation that we're having right now from those comments that I could say I'm struggling here with the terminology because you are changing everything. The paradigm is changing. So you're blowing my mind. So if I'm giving feedback, if I'm in that feedback loop and I'm giving feedback, isn't there also a quantitative and a qualitative number? So that the first is, yes, I'm giving feedback. Check that box. The second is, am I giving good feedback or am I delivering it in the right way? And is there training available at the Excel Institute to help me do that?
Yeah. So the best way to think about that is to use the analogy of a salesperson, right? We all know lots of salespeople who did all the right activities, but at the end of the day, weren't bringing in the results because the qualitative component of how well they sell just isn't there. And the same thing applies to sales managers. There has to be a quantitative and a qualitative perspective. And so when you look at our research, which we're a research-based organization, what you see is that the top 20% of sales managers, as described by hitting and exceeding goal, those top 20%, they're doing 30% more of high payoff coaching activities with their salespeople. But when they're spending time with them, to your point, they score 19% more effective in quality scores. And when you combine those two things, 30% more coaching, 19% more effectiveness, what that leads to is $4.1 million more per manager per year in revenue. And so our job as an organization is to help you quantify through measurement of how much coaching is occurring right now, and then through our relationship, through our partnership, improve the quantity of coaching, improve the quality of coaching, because if we can do those two things, sales grow every single time underneath it.
Wow. Okay. So yes, you just have blown my mind. Okay. So if you're involved in any sales organization, whether you're a sales professional, a frontline manager, or an executive manager, tell me, how do we get a hold of the Excel Institute? Because we all need this. This is sign me up. I'm sold. You've got me. I'm hook, line, and sinker. Just the simple fact is that you can put a number on it and you can quantify it and then qualify it as to what it's doing. And the fact that if I go through this and I become a better manager, it's worth $4.1 million more in sales per frontline manager. Wow. Okay. So the value proposition is way, way, way heavy on that. So now tell us how to get a hold of Excel Institute. What are the things that I need to do? What can I do to support you? And what are the resources that my listeners can be for you?
Yeah. So, well, I'll caveat you there on the value proposition, because it's funny, you know, when we have sometimes when I'm talking with, senior level VPs, other people, I'll just say, listen, you know, by the time we get to the end of this process, you're either going to love me or hate me, because we're going to show you that we can do something that you've said you wanted all along. But once you see that, then you have a decision to make. Do I actually believe in the development of our sales managers, or am I just saying that I believe in it? And so if we work in a psychographic of exceptional leaders, we don't really work with broken sales teams. So if you're the type of person that says, listen, I'm always looking to get better, there's opportunities to grow sales through our management team, best way to get in contact with us is you can go to www.excel, and that's ecsell institute.com. You can learn more. There's resources there. There's a contact us. And then we're going to be throwing up all this information on social media, on LinkedIn. Scott, I know your listeners know where to find you, and through that they can find us. And if anybody wants to get in contact with me, just reach out to Scott or reach out to us via excelinstitute.com.
Thank you very much. So I appreciate that plug. So all of my listeners know all of our resources are always up online at globalnewsforum.com, www.globalnewsforum.com, which is our host for Mind Your Own Business. Of course, you can find me on Twitter. You guys all know that. Yeah, I interact with, you know, tens of thousands of people on Twitter each week. My at sign is @saleswithsully. And then use the hashtag mind your own business or hashtag MYOB. That's sort of been a trend for the last few weeks. People are tired of putting it out there for typing the whole thing out. So they're doing hashtag MYOB, mind your own business. Wow, Will, you've blown my mind. I'm totally excited. I'm looking very much forward to coming out to Lincoln, Nebraska, spending time with you at the Institute, and also meeting Bill, getting to know this company a whole lot better. Thank you so much for being a guest today on Mind Your Own Business. We so appreciate it.
Hey, it's been my pleasure, Scott. You guys are doing some great things, so it's just fun to be a part of it and share some time with your audience.
Well, thank you so much. Again, remember, Will Klefkorn, Excel Institute, and that is ECSELL, Excel, but it's ECSELL Institute, and that is all one word, www.excelinstitute.com. Get a hold of Will. I'm sure there's all kinds of contact information on his website, too. Of course, hit us up on Twitter, and if you want to hear more from Will, definitely reach out to me. I think I'd like to hear from the listeners right now. I think we should start a campaign and do a hashtag, you know, get Will his own show. So I think we should have Will as a host, because I think he has a lot of information, but I know it's time consuming. I don't want to put any more pressure on you, because it really cuts into your meditation time.
Anyway, that's what allows me to do it, Scott. You know, it's the person who says he doesn't have 20 minutes to meditate who needs 2 hours.
That's exactly right. I appreciate that. You're so true. Lots of nuggets today, guys. It's just more than I can even recap today. Just get back in there, get to the Excel Institute website, dig in, find some more information, and apply some of these principles to your managerial style. And it just sounds, you know, fantastic. I can hardly wait. I'm definitely going to be a customer too. So again, thanks for being on Mind Your Own Business. You guys are listening. I'm Scott Sullivan, your host. I do a weekly show called Mind Your Own Business. It's an interview talk radio show where we interview some of the greatest CEOs, entrepreneurs, and business people from all around the world. It happens every single week. I couldn't do what I do without you listening and participating. Always reach out to me on social media. I say it every single week, and you know that I mean it. You can find me on LinkedIn, but friend me on Facebook. So until next week, thank you for being a listener. Mind your own business. You've been listening to Mind Your Own Business right here on InspiredNewsRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in each week as we interview some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs in the world. You can reach us on Twitter at INR Talk Radio. Always use the hashtag MYOB for Mind Your Own Business. Make sure you stop by and check out all of the past episodes and all the great things that are available on our website, www.inspirednewsradio.com. There's great resources there that you can find for all of our other shows too. Thanks for being a part of the Inspired News Radio family. Until next week, remember to mind your own business.